I was on radio with Dennis Miller a couple days ago in L.A., and I told him about the Manning memo, and I said, now, Dennis, you're representing George Bush. You're his defense attorney. After you hear Manning testify to the Manning memo on the witness stand, other than trying to hide beneath the consul table, what would your response be? And Dennis is very quick, very smart, and he gave a good answer. He said, I would call for a recess. There is no answer to the Manning memo.
And that's what we have to do for just 1 minute. Vincent Bugliosi is our guest. The renowned attorney, the man who put Charles Manson behind bars, has written a book, a new book, called The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. We'll be back with him in a minute. Tracy Graham are here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our guest is the renowned prosecutor Vincent Bugliosi. He has written the new book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. He is laying out his case. You begin your book, Vincent Bugliosi, by just telling us the stories of young soldiers who have died. More than 4,000 now. What about Iraqi civilians? How do they weigh into your case as you build it against the president?
Well, that's not going to prove guilt, guilty or not guilty. But if he's convicted of first-degree murder by an American jury and he gets into the penalty phase and the prosecutor seeks the death penalty, all of this evidence of how Bush responded to this horror in Iraq could be introduced in aggravation, just like the defense can offer evidence in mitigation. One of the underlying emotions behind this whole thing that prompted me to do this book, well, the main thing is that he took this nation to war under false pretenses. But throughout this hell on earth that George Bush created, the evidence is very, very clear that with over 100,000 innocent Iraqi men, women, and children, and babies, and 4,000 American soldiers dying horrible, violent deaths, and hundreds of thousands of their survivors crying out hysterically, and having no way to cope with the unspeakable horror of it all, and having nightmares over what happened, George Bush, the evidence is very, very clear, smiled through it all. In fact, you look at a photograph of Bush and six or seven other people, they're all smiling. Who has the biggest smile on his face? George Bush. The evidence is very clear that while young American soldiers who never even had a chance to live out their dreams were being blown to pieces by roadside bombs in Iraq, George Bush was having fun and living life, enjoying life to the very fullest. I'm talking about running, bicycling, joking with friends, slapping backs, dancing and swiveling his hips like Elvis to blaring music, eating his hot dogs and blueberry pies, almost always seeming to be in the very best of good spirits. And you don't have to take my word for this. I have the photographs in the book and everything, but you don't have to take my word for this. George Bush himself has had no hesitancy in saying things like this. And as I quote George Bush, I want you to think of two things. Number one, the incredible horror and savagery and mutilation of bodies and beheadings and the sea of blood and the screams going on at the time he's making this remark. And try to think if you can, of Presidents Roosevelt, Truman, LBJ, Nixon, during their respective wars, saying things like this. Here's George Bush, right in the middle of all this horror. Laura and I are having the time of our lives. It's going to be a great, it's going to be a perfect day. I'm in a great mood. As recently as December 2007, I'm feeling pretty good about life. Now, Amy and Juan, even if George Bush was only guilty of making an innocent mistake and taking this nation to war, not murder, as I firmly believe, with all of the death and the horror and the suffering he has caused, what type of a monstrous individual is it who could literally be happy with his life? And that's part of the emotional underpinning for this book.
Well, Vincent Bugliosi, the other main line of evidence that you present in the book is his repeated attempts to connect Saddam Hussein to Al-Qaeda and to the attacks of 9/11. Could you summarize those arguments?
Yeah, very, very quickly. He tried to convince the American people that Hussein was involved in 9/11. Now, right after 9/11, a poll of the American people, open-ended poll, showed that only 3% of the American public believed that Hussein and Iraq were involved in 9/11. And yet, within months, that number went up to 70% of the American people thought Hussein was involved in 9/11. Now, if it wasn't George Bush and his people who were responsible for it, then who was it? You, I, Danny DeVito? Here's what he did. Here's what he did. He'd constantly, because what he was doing, he was trying to convince the American people of Hussein's involvement in 9/11 by unmistakable innuendo and implication. And under the law, that's the same thing as doing it expressly. One way he did it, he'd constantly talk about Hussein being an imminent threat to the security of this country, and in the same speech, sometimes the same breath, he kept talking about 9/11. Well, here's the American people, not accustomed to a president who's taken them to war under false pretenses. That thought's not even entering their mind. They're not parsing his words. They hear 9/11, and they hear Hussein being an imminent threat, and they came to the conclusion that Hussein must have been involved with Al-Qaeda in 9/11. And then he just flat out lied by suggesting, by asserting, that Hussein and Al-Qaeda had terrorist connections. He'd say things like this. When you're talking about the war on terror, you cannot distinguish between Al-Qaeda and Hussein. He said that Hussein was training Al-Qaeda in bomb making, in the use of poisons and deadly gases. Now, the average American infers from that, I mean, it's not too much of a leap of logic, that if Hussein and Al-Qaeda have these terrorist connections, and Hussein is training Al-Qaeda, that Hussein must have been involved with Al-Qaeda in 9/11. That was what he did by implication. But by implication in the law, he can't take the witness and say, well, I never said it. No, you didn't say it directly, but you said it indirectly. Let's see how far he would get in front of a competent prosecutor by saying, I never expressly said it. He said it by unmistakable implication. As late as August of 2006, over 90% of the troops in Iraq thought that it was payback time, that Hussein was involved in 9/11, and they were getting even for the American public for what Hussein and Iraq did to 9/11. Wherever you look, and I've got so much more evidence in this book, the evidence is overwhelming that this guy is guilty. The evidence is overwhelming that this guy is guilty. And if we get a competent prosecutor, he's going to end up getting convicted of first-degree murder. And by the way, within a very short period of time, perhaps a week, I'm going to be reaching out to the prosecutors of America. There's close to 1,000 out there, looking for a courageous prosecutor, a state attorney general, a DA. I don't have any clout anymore. I got the clout of an emaciated moth. I'm a moth. I'm not in law enforcement. But I'm going to be reaching out to prosecutors who do have clout, who do have the authority to go against George Bush. I'm sending them a copy of my book with a cover letter, telling them to read the book, and if they agree with me that the evidence of Bush's guilt is clear, and they feel that they have jurisdiction, and I've spent hundreds of hours at the law library establishing this all-important point of jurisdiction, then I'm going to tell them to proceed forward, and I'm going to offer my help in any way that they see fit, which could range all the way from being a consultant to being appointed a special prosecutor.